Hello, and thank you for joining us for today's webinar. I'm Nancy Stone with RealCom, and we're pleased to be kicking off our Smart Building Bootcamp series with part one, defining a smart building. We have a great panel who'll be discussing smart building strategies and standards and presenting best practices from some innovative projects. Before we get started, let's review a few housekeeping items. First, please use the Q&A box on the bottom right of your screen to submit questions or comments. We'll try to get to them during the session, or we'll follow up after if we run short of time. For the best webinar experience, we suggest you close any other internet applications you are running. If you encounter any technical issues during the session, please contact me at nstone@realcom.com. And lastly, this webinar is being recorded, and a link to the recording will be sent to all registrants. We'd like to thank today's gold sponsors, Distech Controls, LinkSpring, Montgomery Technologies, and POE Texas. You'll hear more about these companies during the session. We'd also like to thank our gold sponsor, Igor. Let's watch a quick message about them before we get started.
My name is Dwight Stewart. I'm the founder of Igor. Igor is helping make buildings smart, and it simplifies that process. What we do is we make a unified platform, so that really reduces the cost, so you don't have to have that end-to-end for each one. And now you start getting some extra benefits where you can see a sensor from one thing can be applied to take action somewhere else. We make it really simple. It's a single cable that is able to send power as well as data communication, and it can be installed by just about anyone. Igor is in 27 different countries, and we have been fortunate to be growing at 300% a year.
Today's webinar will be moderated by Tom Shercliffe, co-founder and principal of Intelligent Buildings. Founded in 2004, Intelligent Buildings provides managed and advisory services that reduce operational risk and lower cost structures in commercial real estate. Tom has been a friend to the RealCom community for more than 18 years and has been presenting the Smart Building Bootcamp since 2013. Tom, great to have you back, and thanks for moderating today's session.
Well, thanks, Nancy. This is the bootcamp's been a great series because we all get excited about the technology and what's coming in the future. And the bootcamp is a chance for us all to kind of, you know, step back down and say, you know, what is a smart building? What are the basics? How do we build that foundation?
Okay, turning it over to you.
You bet. Well, so let's just do a very brief table setting here, and then I really want to dive into this panel because it's really a great group today. So, you know, smart buildings is we say defining a smart building, but it's really one of the most misunderstood and confusing phrases, right up there with green, sustainable, even digital twin. Not exactly sure what they all mean sometimes. And that's because smart buildings are not objective. They change with use type, owners, managers, occupants, even time horizons, economic conditions, and even personalities. So you can look at across that spectrum and see that there's it's really hard to pin it into a definition. And really, we like to say that, you know, the smartness that you can put into a building doesn't change what your core business or organizational purpose and goals are, right? Only you do that. The technology doesn't change that. So we like to say that smart building is really allowing you to get to what your purpose is faster, cheaper, with less risk, and also keeping things like flexibility and scalability. So having said that, our panel is going to speak to you not as much about bells and whistles or ones and zeros, but about the attributes of smart buildings. And I think really, if you can make notes of these attributes as we go through and these foundational things you should be doing, it's really going to empower you to have your version of a smart building. So that being said, I really want to yield time here to the panelists and the questions. So I'm going to start with Damian Stone, who's a product owner at the Ford Motor Company, and where he supports the development of smart facilities and IoT systems, and by a vote beforehand has the best opening slide of anybody, not to get ahead of it. Damon, you're up.
Thanks, Tom. So thank you all for joining us today. Most of you have probably heard of Ford Motor Company before, right? For over the last 100 years, we've been designing, manufacturing, and selling vehicles. Lately, our annual production numbers have been around 5.5 million vehicles, and we have roughly over 200,000 employees globally. We recently have announced plans to double our investment in electric and autonomous vehicles by $22 billion and $7 billion, respectively, by 2025. Let's see if I can. There we go. So, but few of you have probably actually heard of Ford Land, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of Ford Motor Company. And our main objective is really to design, build, operate real estate to support Ford's core competencies. So Ford Land currently manages roughly 220 million square feet, consisting of manufacturing, commercial, and mixed use. That really kind of equates out to around 1,500 different buildings in 48 countries. So today, we're roughly about 10 years through our master plan cycle, which involves the transformation of both our Dearborn campus and other global campuses, as well as the return to Motor City with the introduction of a vibrant new campus in Detroit's Corktown neighborhood. The centerpiece of that new campus is really the acquisition of the iconic Michigan Central Station, which is currently being renovated. This site and the similar purchases around it will serve as our innovation hub for both EV and autonomous vehicle development. And our Dearborn campus is also under, or was also in need of a transformation, as the average age of those facilities are really around 70 years old. So on to what is a smart building. In many areas of technology today, there tends to be these buzzwords, which are generally kind of these very nebulous terms, as Tom was mentioning, and it really could be interpreted in a lot of different ways. And so I'm gonna take a slightly different approach. But to some, a smart facility might resemble something similar to what you would envision on the Jetsons, with electronic devices and robots everywhere. But to me, a smart building is actually quite contrary to that in most cases, right? Where the technology is really unbeknownst to the users. And so, you know, kind of before you and all the experts, you know, that are going to present after me kind of contradict this, let me be clear by saying that, you know, ubiquitous connectivity, sensors collecting telemetry data, system integration are really only just the first start of a smart building. A smart facility is really about bringing all these different components together to drive better decisions, drive automated actions to really increase efficiency, productivity, and provide a better user experience in a seamless manner for both our employees, visitors, vendors, and everyone else that really kind of comes through our facilities. So I hope this was a good base, and really to kind of give it back to you there, Tom.
Oh, thanks. And if you don't mind, just a couple of quick questions. First, curious, just for folks, what do you know, why was Ford Land formed? Was it for making a profit on real estate? Was it about to keep standards and controls? What was it to keep it sort of an organizational approach? What was the reason for that?
Yeah, great question. This is something that happened way before my time. I believe this was a spinoff of roughly around 50 years ago, when I believe it was Henry Ford II really decided to start developing the Dearborn area into an R&D campus. And if I had to guess, I would probably bet that it was probably more maybe some tax or finance kind of decision, right? Where you could kind of spin off all of your real estate holdings and maybe charge back to the business as, you know, an operating expense to help drive down the business's bottom line as well.
Yeah, and I maybe another general question kind of like that. I mean, you know, why is there such a focus on smart facilities? Meaning, I think everybody can understand, you know, building cars should be very high tech and robotic and automated, but why that kind of focus on facilities?
Yeah, great question. There's actually probably three or four reasons there. The first of which is Bill Ford, huge sustainability advocate, right? Every year we make this list of about reducing our water consumption and production and energy consumption of producing vehicles. And so that's a big one, right? Driving around down our operational expense with our real estate holdings. The second big one is really around recruiting. I think we really want to hire the best and brightest, and the individuals in the workforce these days really have this mindset of what a facility that they work in really is. And honestly, a lot of our facilities being 70 plus years old just really didn't meet that. And so it's really around retention and really attracting the best and brightest to come work at Ford. So those are kind of the two big drivers. But, you know, I think there's a lot of opportunities, right, as I mentioned, to improve that productivity.
No, that's interesting. The attraction and retention is a pretty hot topic in that. And to kind of that, maybe a little bit related to that too, do give folks a sense, do you own all or most of your facilities? Do you still lease some spaces? And how what's that balance there?
Great question. I should know this, right? We're kind of going through some of these exercises right now, kind of given what's happened over the past year. I would have to say probably 80% of our facilities are owned outright. And then obviously with a lot of joint ventures that we have, we typically kind of spin up leases in strategic areas such as, you know, Miami, Texas, California, to really support maybe some of these ad hoc objectives.
Got it. Well, one more thought I just wanted to add, and maybe a question too. I loved your, and we didn't plan this, but your what it's not list, you know, with systems and sensors and analytics and dashboards and robots. And, you know, a lot of times people will try to kind of lean towards defining smart buildings as having these kind of things. And if it's not those things, do you start with the idea of use cases or what you're trying to accomplish? How do you start if it's not? By the way, I completely agree. Systems and features is a conversation that never ends, literally. Do you guys start with, you know, use cases, or what are your KPIs, or how do you start with at the beginning so you then you know what you're looking to add in terms of technology later?
Yeah, another great question. So I just a little clarity. So I work for Ford Motor Company. My business is Ford Land. So I support really everything that Ford Land wants to do for their campus transformation. But one of our tenants in information technology is moving to this product-driven organization, right? Where we're really focusing on individual projects. And instead of having kind of siloed teams where, okay, you focus on networking, you focus on infrastructure, and so on and so forth, we really take the ownership, the DevOps model, all the way from kind of that design thinking all the way through production. And so that really kind of gives us the ability to sit down with our business customers, drive out those initial use cases, those requirements, and then really start kind of prioritizing which ones bring the most value early off in the process. And so really focus on that 80-20 model of, I want to deploy 80% of your requirements out of the gate, and then we'll focus on those 20% and iterate over time to kind of, you know, because that 20% is usually the hardest part to deploy and usually provides the least amount of value. And so really just strategic thinking and design thinking is really that core tenet there.
No, yeah, the design thinking actually happening, right? And you touched on one other thing that's pretty important for everybody that we'll hopefully touch on a little more today, and that was the interdepartmental. Like, you have IT, you have Ford Land, you have internal customers and KPIs and those kind of things. Has that interdepartmental process been smooth or difficult, or how's that been going since you've been there?
Yeah, so I've been in this role for about 3 years, and it's something that we deal with all the time. It's this whole IT OT conversion thing is really eye opening, and we both sides of the you know, the OT side learns a lot from IT and vice versa, because our processes are different. We kind of have this legacy and this technical debt on both sides that both sides kind of really need to get caught up to speed and understand, you know, how do we deploy solutions securely? How do we develop runbooks so we can continue to, you know, manage those, right, as the team kind of changes and over time as we move into different skill teams. So, that's always one of the biggest challenges, but one of the fun ones in the same regard.
No, that's good. And you said something in there that not long ago I had to look up as a political science major, and that was the technical debt. And is it fair to say, because this is important for folks that are kind of going down the smart building trail, that if you keep building on bad technology or a bad foundation, you're building up more and more technical debt, you call it? Is that the way you describe it?
Yeah, absolutely. We often kind of go through to look at the main source of a piece of information, and we start to realize it wasn't where we thought it was. It's upstream, maybe three or four levels back. And so now we need to go kind of find an expert, right, that maybe design that or find those technical documents that really help us get back to the main source. And so, yeah, it's a huge challenge.
Yeah. So anyway, Damien, that was really fantastic, especially with your size and being a corporation as opposed to a commercial or REIT, and your commitment to it. And it's been a long time, like you said, with Ford Land and all your interdepartmental and the focus is really helpful. So thanks for that. And if you'll hang around, we'll swing back to you in the Q&A at the end. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, we're going to bring up John with Dexus, and I'm going to introduce John, and then we're just going to have a real brief, provocative little video to start our conversation. So John's head of smart building technology and responsible for overseeing the strategic development of building technology, prop tech, and innovative solutions across the portfolio. He leads the building technology team to deliver the next generation of cutting edge digitally enabled buildings. And I say John and his group are part of the one percenters on this topic. So it's great to have you, John, and look forward to talking more after this brief video.
Yeah, John, I'm gonna let you take it from there.
Thanks. So thanks, Tom, and thanks RealCom for getting us involved. It's early morning over here in Australia, so forgive me. But look, I'm not going to dwell too long on this first slide. It's just to set some context of the size of the organisation that we are. We're the largest commercial landlord of office space. As you can see, we look after 32 billion of property. And it's important to note that we've got an 11.4 billion pipeline of new developments. So the biggest challenge that we have is the existing stock and not the new buildings. With the new builds, we're going for best in class experiences. And obviously we can embed those technologies into that. So I wanna focus just a few minutes on how do we deal with our existing buildings. And the video you've just seen was actually an existing building that we brought up to date with a new technology. So let's see if this clicker works. So I want to go back to 101. And I want you to think about, to create a smart building, we have to connect lots of devices to create some really good outcomes. And those devices come from various technology strains, various manufacturers. A lot of those are legacy systems in your buildings. So we step through a process, a 101 process, to work towards, if we want to enable a digital twin or get smarter with our outcomes, how do we get there with the existing legacy equipment? So it starts with our digital readiness survey, which I'll talk a little bit more about in a minute. And that's really understanding what you've got in your building and whether you can repurpose it, whether it needs to be upgraded. And it's very also important to have technology standards. So we've written a suite of standards to make sure that when the technology is upgraded, it's a very consistent grade. The connectivity piece is obviously very, very important as well. How do you connect internally and externally? You need to look at the remote connections into the building. And then obviously they need to be cyber secure. And then how do you actually acquire the data sets that are inside those systems? So if you really want to start looking towards getting smart, and also if you've got a vision on what would it take for a digital twin, you need to go through this process first. But it's also very, very important to understand the outcomes that you're trying to achieve. So there we've got some typical things around safety, connectivity, experience, and a subset of those are all sorts of different systems and different types of information. So it's a lot of information on this page, but it's really important to get that foundation right between the surveying of what you've got right up to how you're going to get the information. So what we did with our digital readiness survey is we built an online form and we asked some questions to make sure that we got consistent answering coming back. So then we could actually filter everything to understand what we got. And the biggest thing that we were after was our life cycle of our technology, and also how we condense and consolidate projects. So I'll give you an example. If we want to try and get an integrated communications network in the building, we would focus on what access control systems are going to be upgraded, such as CCTV, going from the analog to the IP, and then what BMS systems in the same building or other systems are looking at an upgrade. And we would work out, can I run the BMS for another year until my CCTV has been budgeted to upgrade, consolidate together, and then out of the CCTV network, upgrade it to create a converged network, cybersecure it, and then connect the BMS to it. And the key information is all around the getting the network schematics out the building, understanding how the systems talk, and getting their life cycle to work out, is it worth doing with the existing system, or do I wait to do an upgrade? So it's a little bit of a risk analysis and really good for budgeting as well. It really helps you fund going forward. So I mentioned previously the technology standards. These are pretty in depth. They're kind of a design, but we wouldn't want to call them a design, but they really clearly articulate how systems talk, how they connect, how the network infrastructure is set up, such things like VLANs, how all the protocols work, the interface of the devices. And although it's a pretty comprehensive document, it's really, really important that now every single upgrade that we do with our buildings of any networking has got this standard going with it. But also this standard feeds into our new developments as well. So now we have this really good scalable upgrade of our existing stock that meets the same standards as the new development as well. Really, really important to get this piece of work done. And then looking at how we get from our legacy traditional systems. So on the left, you can see that we've got lots of siloed networks, a lot of copper infrastructure, and a big cyber risk footprint. So sort of like stage one was, can we just converge those independent networks into a next generation firewall, lock it down for cyber? We still have the good remote connectivity. The system still functions, but at least we've secured the building. And then to the next generation of how do we then converge all of those silo networks into a single network and still keep our cybersecurity upgrade. So that's a little bit of a pathway for you if you're going from a siloed legacy and trying to get towards this integrated network. But then we need to think about the data sets that you collect, and you really got to think about what's the purpose of the information that I need. Where does it need to go? Do I need to host it in my own data lake, or are my vendors going to host it? And how do I use it? And the things with data, you need to be really be careful that there are three fundamental things that you need to think about: is the variability of it, is the amount of different data sets that are coming in, the velocity, and that's the speed at which you want to access it and do something with it, and how much there is by volume. But the most important factor is the value over the top of that. You've really got to understand what value does the data provide for you, and how long do you need to keep the data for, and what's missing. So I've seen some of the analytic systems there really not giving 100% value just because of the data sets that they could really do with aren't there, which goes back to that survey again. You've really got to understand what's available. So if you're going to deploy a product, you get the best value out of that product. And then just reflecting back on the video that you saw, so to get Gateway up to next generation and create it, this touchless experience, that was 18 months of pretty hard work planning, bringing these companies together, understanding how they communicate, understanding the personas was very important. We have a visitor that needs to have touchless access as we do an occupant. So how do we bring all those different people together and create the same experience for them? And there's a lot of planning that goes into place with that, understanding then how we can bring all these systems together to make it as seamless as it was. So although it was a great outcome, and it was pre-pandemic, so it just actually the building went live just as we went into lockdown, unfortunately. But the outcomes were all the customers have got a great experience from it, because they can go back into that building now and they can go literally from street to tenancy without touching anything. So that's all from me for the moment. Back to you, Tom.
Well, John, that's fantastic. And like with Damien, pops up a lot of questions. One thing, just real quick, can you clarify what you were talking about, the convergence process for existing buildings, and just kind of clarify how you go about that and how it's not viewed as a rip and replace for things that are work? What's that sequence or that path to doing that?
Okay, there's a couple of things there. So look, we acquire quite a lot of buildings, and we're not the technology department, not in control of what those acquisitions look like. So when there's an acquisition coming up, obviously we have to do some due diligence, which is where our survey comes online. But to onboard them into our platform, they may have some systems in there that are only a couple of years old. So we've still got some good life expectancy in those systems, but we still need to try and converge them. So that's what I mean by the most important thing is to try and get that network piece right. And it could be that we don't rip out the system because there's nothing wrong with it. It's just it's not connected onto a converged platform.
So, okay, got it. So that brings up another thought. Do you have, so when you buy a building or even technology, do you have filters and requirements that those systems have to pass through, or even contractors are going to work for you have to pass through? Do you have your smart building filters that you won't buy certain things that don't meet these criteria?
I wouldn't say that smart is the top of the priority, no, but it's something that we have to deal with. So this is why we have to have a very flexible platform and infrastructure about how we onboard and how we exit as well. We need to have an exit strategy as well. And I have to say that, you know, the operational side of running a portfolio, there's lots of moving parts, lots of stakeholders. It's a very, very complex beast. So the technology has to slot into all of those, all of those factors.
Right. And then so you mentioned a lot of technology in the cool use case that you showed, and even talking about digital twins. So how have you dealt with all of the downstream impact of this? In other words, you know, you don't just put in technology, obviously. It's got to have workflow. You've got to have your contractors fall into line, especially with something like digital twin. That seems sometimes like a bigger effort. Anybody can buy technology, right? But then how do you property manage this thing that you have? How about the downstream impact?
Those standards are so important. So there are standards we have as well of changes in behavior. So for instance, we're looking at now the whole data maintenance driven model. We're looking at remote access behaviors. So I think what's happened is with the industry, as we've kind of been emerging, we've gone from very much a vendor kind of driven industry. So the vendor will be in control of the systems they manage, how they manage them, because if it's in their portfolio of products, and they almost dictate to us, this is how we're going to look after this system. But what we're trying to do now is looking at reversing that, saying, well, that's great, and we're happy you're doing that, but we also need you to comply to our rules and standards, which are, this is how you will access the system. This is what you won't do on the system. And it's a behavioral thing. As I said, it's always never been about the technology. It's more about the people and the process.
Yeah, that's, and last quick question, and we'll stay on schedule. Does that make it into contractual language for those contractors? Or is Absolutely. It just a...
No, it has to be. We have to make people accountable for what they're doing. So, and look, you know, it goes back to the cybersecurity now is becoming such a high thing on the agenda. I would say that's probably one of the most important things that we should be considering. We're connecting these pretty sophisticated systems to the internet, and you're really, you know, you're opening yourself up. So you've really got to concentrate on how's the connectivity secure? How do your contractors get in out of the system? And the big thing is about the identity management. That's a huge piece as well that you need to consider.
No, that's fantastic. And RealCom just did we're fortunate to be part of an OT cybersecurity webinar just recently. We talked a lot about that. And a quick point I'll make on that I know, you know, John, just so the audience knows, here in boot camp, it's not just a smart building thing of doing cybersecurity. Systems have been computer driven and internet connected since the 80s. So don't think because you haven't gone down John's road that you're fine. These are all digital systems sitting there, even if they're so-called not smart or not interconnected.
Absolutely.
Good, John. Fantastic. And likewise, if you'll hang around till the Q&A, we're gonna move on and to the next panelist. And we'll start. You bet. We'll start with a short video here as well.
Facility operating costs can make up almost one-third of an organization's overhead. With that type of expense at stake, it's essential for today's commercial buildings to replace siloed systems with systems that are connected, smart, integrated, and interoperable. Linkspring's Edge to Enterprise for Enterprise and Multi-Sites is a turnkey smart building solution that connects, accesses, and translates operational and facility data from devices and equipment into actionable information. Information that can save energy, increase efficiency, and reduce operating costs while maintaining a higher level of comfort for occupants. The Edge to Enterprise solution consists of hardware and software, combined with engineering, deployment, and professional services. It's everything you need to deploy and experience the value of a smart facility enterprise, including connectivity, integration, interoperability, automation, command and control, data access and normalization, analytics, and cloud services. Edge to Enterprise integrates with existing cloud services like Google or AWS, or it can leverage Connection, Linkspring's innovative data management and visualization platform for real-time operational and energy information analytics. This all results in a system that gives you the data and control to manage and operate your facility more efficiently, save energy, reduce cost, achieve business outcomes, and add value to your building assets. Linkspring's Edge to Enterprise for Enterprise and Multi-Sites. Smart technology, smart equipment, smart solutions.
Okay, great. That means we're going to bring up Mark Petock, who is the Chief Marketing and Communication Officer for Linkspring, leading corporate and product marketing, strategy, brand management, public relations, and communications that support the company's strategic and growth initiatives. He's a pioneer in leading the intelligent smart buildings and M2M movement and pushing the industry forward. And I know a longtime friend and supporter of RealCom. And Mark, welcome and thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Delighted to be with everyone today. I'm going to take my time and touch on five aspects of a smart building. And one of these aspects is you and John set me up pretty well, is talking about the foundation and of creating a smart building. So what I've prepared is just a visual. So on the left-hand side, you see some things: connectivity, integration, interoperability. Consider them or look at them as functions of a smart building, what makes up a smart building foundation. And look at the right side as those things that might be part of the output of that particular function. So if you look at connectivity, start at the top, there are possibilities to use wired, wireless, Wi-Fi, IP, and PoE. Then we talk a lot about integration. And again, as examples, it could be HVAC, lighting, access control, and the list will go on and on and on. I believe is the most important today in building a smart building foundation is interoperability. And this is the interoperability, not only of the equipment, the systems and the devices, but one of the most overlooked areas and outputs is data. And we heard John mention the importance of data as well, is that being able to make that data interoperable, no matter where it's come from, no matter how it's gotten there, but it's important to make that data just as interoperable as your equipment systems and devices. Then there's control, and that can be real-time command of the building. And what we've seen really come to light, especially with COVID, is the importance of remote access. And then the repair and maintenance side of maintaining and managing a building. And then to dwell a little bit in the data side, it's not only the access and the normalization, but really important is the orchestration and the exchange of that data and the ability for that data to be used, whether it be used at the edge itself or up in a cloud. Or where we're seeing a lot of things go is a hybrid model between edge and cloud. Then, of course, health and safety, and this has become more important than ever before because of COVID. So you've got the indoor air quality, ventilation, air filtration, and what I refer to is the indoor intelligence. This is where you are getting data on occupancy by room and who's in the building, where they're at, how much air is flowing, so forth and so on. So indoor intelligence has really gained importance like it never has before. Then analytics, again, whether it's MNV, FDD, predictive, and so forth, cannot say enough about cybersecurity because it's all about mitigating the risk. Cybersecurity, you must mitigate that risk. And finally, sustainability. And what we're looking at today is the ESG side, the environmental, social, and governance. The next aspects I'm going to talk about briefly is KPIs. And again, being able to develop and come out with a given set of KPIs that everybody who's involved in the building will know what those are. So it can be revolving around energy, water, such as usage and utilities, obviously comfort, indoor air quality in and around COVID, the equipment performance and uptime. Is the equipment that is running your buildings performing as the manufacturer has led you to believe? Keeping occupant complaints down. I think for all of those who have tenants and responsible for leases, I think that's a very important. Again, sustainability, and then KPIs around operational metrics and financial projections on how you're trying to operate that building. The next one is business outcomes. And I lump these into two categories, operational and economic. So if we're looking at operational, some of the business outcomes might be, I want to lower my op costs and on my maintenance costs. I want to run my buildings better efficiency and better performance. I'm socially responsible, so I want to ensure that my buildings are environmentally running friendly. I've got tenants and I want to adhere and meet their demands and their satisfaction, and of course, safety and security. And then on the economic side, let's look at, you know, how can I help control my CapEx? How can I improve capital planning? Increase asset value. Smart buildings do increase the asset value of a building. Also, it enables me to look at outcomes, running a competitive market advantage, and again, can't say enough about mitigating risk. So if I were to start today, since this is a boot camp, where do you start? You can't start everywhere. Start where you know you will succeed and that you will see and realize some value. My suggestion, HVAC, lighting, and of course, indoor air quality. And I think that is a mandatory thing today as we all begin to return to our buildings. And finally, I want to leave you with some getting started suggestions. Walk before you run. Oh, don't run, walk. Make sure you prepare internally that you're getting everybody together, such as the OT and the IT, which we've heard before, your maintenance people, so forth and so on. Have a strategy. Follow that strategy. Follow a roadmap approach. Have a roadmap. Don't bite off more than what is feasible. Prioritize what is important, what is the most important that can be done today and will have an initial effect on you. Define your KPIs and your business outcomes, as I said earlier. Ensure that you're doing this on an open platform. And one that I cannot say enough about, make sure you own your data. Data is the new king of our buildings. Make sure you own that data. Know your limitations. And if you first succeed, if don't succeed, try again. So hopefully that gives you a nice foundation to think about your smart building initiatives. Tom?
Well, thanks, Mark. I tell you, I've been doing this a long time. I think that was about as well a condensed version of this session as I've seen. So you might as well just drop the mic right now. But a couple questions. Since it's boot camp, I want some micro and macro questions, if you don't mind. You mentioned edge and cloud and that kind of thing. When it comes to a building, what do you mean by edge? It sounds like an IT term.
Basically, what I mean is these devices that sit on the edge of the network of the building network that's running the building, such as they could be sensors. They could be an equipment controller, such as an air handler unit or those types of things. It could be lighting. So those things that aren't a central HVAC system or a chiller, those types of things. And they're just devices. And yeah, we all know that IoT has invaded our space and there's thousands of building devices now.
Invaded, yes. And maybe a perspective question. You know, you've been doing this for a while and you have lots of terms on that sheet, and it really did a good job of you coming back and saying, you know, start this way, these basics. But I do want to ask, you know, in the past couple of years, I mean, just kind of recently, you know, what have you seen change the most? I mean, you take that in perspective.
Well, I think, let me answer it kind of in a multiple way. So first and foremost, I think the conversation has changed. We're talking about new and different value propositions, new business outcomes that technology providers as well as owners and operators are trying to achieve. The importance of data, and I use a term that data is now more important than the device itself. So again, the importance of data, cybersecurity, and I think because of COVID, it's trust. We need to make our buildings feel like they are a trusted environment for all of us who are returning to these buildings. And I think, I'll end your question with this. I look at it as our buildings are really no longer passive places anymore. They're digitally and socially places we count on and we go to. They're places of engagement, and it's not only people, but it's also engaging the devices and the systems and IoT and OT together.
Good. Really helpful. And thanks again. We'll circle back around in just a minute. We're going to go on to the next one. Again, we're going to start with a brief introduction video. Okay, great. That'll bring up Kevin with Distech, and where he's the Director of Business Development for Distech Controls and has over 15 years of experience in the intelligent building automation industry. As Director of Business Development, he leads a global team of dedicated to specific vertical markets, including healthcare, data centers, commercial real estate, and retail for Distech Controls. Kevin.
Hey, thanks, Tom. Good to be here. Thanks for having me. You know, I think a lot of what Mark's message was is going to be a lot of overlap with what I've got to say here in defining a smart building. In the spirit of boot camp, I'm going to start off in that green box over there, just quick HVAC basics. A lot of times we get hung up on our acronyms. And you know, one key component of a smart building is a building automation system. It's also known as a BMS, building management system, building automation control system, or energy management system. So there's different acronyms that we use to define a building automation system. But I think it's a real critical part. It's a pervasive system. It's a system that is throughout your whole campus, right, your whole building, and therefore gives you access, if designed right and with the right technology, to get you anywhere in that building and collect that data. At the very core function of any building automation control system is scheduling trends and alarms. Every building automation control system can do that. They do it a little bit differently, but that's really the core functionality. But there's really a lot more to it. So I want to kind of set the stage there, got the HVAC basics out of the way. I'm going to move over to kind of that first box there, which is data collection through enabling technology. And like I said, a lot of what Mark talked about, I think there's going to be a lot of overlap to what I've got to say here. But data is critical. Data is king. That's really the key to enabling and empowering your buildings and making it a smart building. So traditionally, if I talk just about open protocols or standard traditional communication protocols and building automation systems, we have BACnet. Inocean is a wireless technology that's used in a lot of places. Modbus. There's LawnWorks, and Niagara Forest is a software platform used that you can pull in a lot of different technologies and proprietary and open protocols. So those are very typical and common technologies that are used in building automation control today. But really, where do you need to go in the future, and where are we going in order to have a smart building and be future ready as we move past 2021 and into the future? And some of those technologies that you really have to have in order to gather that data and have that wrapped up in your enabling technology is some of them that include BACnet IP. You need RESTful APIs so you can gather data outside of the building automation system from all over the internet. Wireless technology such as Bluetooth, Wi-Fi. There's a lot of other technologies out there that I think are really key part of strategies going forward in defining what a smart building is and to protect yourself looking forward into the future. So now that you're gathering the data, you've got the infrastructure and the enabling technology in place. Now what? Who uses it? Well, traditionally, all this data would be consumed and acted upon by energy managers or facility managers, and that's about it. But in the future, we're seeing more and more different types of users utilizing the data, benefiting from this data, making decisions from the data. You have strategists, you have property owners, real estate investors, they're looking at all this information and making decisions, even down to security officers, human resource people, making decisions for their people in their spaces, and occupants, people coming into buildings and wanting to change their set point and have control over their comfort and lighting. So if you think about, if you gather the data and have the technology able to do that, now you open up possibilities for such a wider audience and so many more people making decisions with that information. Now, again, Mark talked on a lot of things of how it's presented, and we've heard about that a little bit earlier. There's a lot of other parts and pieces that go into it. But again, if you can gather that data and disseminate that information to the right stakeholders, now you're empowering them to make good decisions. And that kind of takes me to the last box there, which is if you get the data in the right hands and it's disseminated the right way, now you're making better, faster, and smarter decisions for those people in your space. And again, energy efficiency, and just managing your building, again, very traditional uses of the information, but especially in this day and age where we're now very concerned about indoor air quality and safety in terms of health and what's in our environment, this information empowers a much wider audience to make decisions and to make occupants feel safer in the space. Space utilization is another big one that Mark talked on. I agree with completely. Is now you're with the right technology enabling like wayfinding. Now you're making decisions of how the space is utilized, and more information provided about how the space is being used turns into better decision making for those in the space. And it's better for overall for the occupants, for the people controlling the building. And really, all this really boils down to one of the things it boils down to is increasing the building value, right? As property owners and landlords of these buildings, you want the value of your building to increase. And if you create a space where occupants feel comfortable going, it's energy efficient, you've got productivity there with your space, all this translates into what I consider helping build a smart building. So that's what I've got for now, Tom. Back to you.
Yeah, really, really helpful, and really good thinking and logic. And I've just got a couple of boot camp esque questions, if you could. Sure. If we could just go back a second to the HVAC building automation, building management system. I mean, those terms get thrown around a lot. Is building automation a category or is it a system?
The way I've looked at it, Tom, it's really all it's they're kind of all synonymous. So building automation controls are the controls themselves, and that's typically, building automation control system, right? So there's an S on the end of that. We just like, three-letter acronyms in our business. You've got the building management system. Again, you're managing all the systems that are in the building, and if they're, coordinated and networked together, you can obviously manage multiple systems from one front end, lighting, fire. You can even monitor fire, security, life safety. HVAC, of course, people counting and people tracking in terms of, occupant or space utilization. So all those systems can be brought into one. It's kind of interoperable in my, obviously, energy management system gives a little bit of a different spin when you talk about the EMS, because now you're talking specifically about the energy spend and the footprint of that building or space.
So we're not going to break a rule and make it a commercial, but I'm going to give you a little latitude here. If a customer came to you to buy a Distech control system, would you say, I'm going to help you with a building management system that's going to do more than just HVAC control? I mean, would you start there, or would you say, this is what I do and you got to add these other things?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it boils down to the need of that customer, right? I mean, what they're looking to do and what they're trying to accomplish, what their goals are. At the very core, our system does HVAC, but there's so much more to it. Using the technologies you can pull in so many other systems. It really, one thing I love about this industry, Tom, and what our systems are able to do, you can get so creative and pulling in so many different systems. It really boils down, it's hard for me to say we can't do that because the technology's there, right? The technology's there. And it really boils down to what the goals and objectives are of that customer, of that owner. And our systems are able to do that.
It goes back maybe to what we said earlier, is that even with you who sell systems, the customer shouldn't necessarily be looking for a system. They should be looking for a way of doing things, a certain kinds of use cases, outcomes they want to have. And you can say, for my role in the world, here's how I can help this use case and this use case, but maybe not those over here.
Yeah, absolutely. Look at the desired outcomes and then go from there, right? What are you trying to accomplish and then provide a solution? Absolutely.
Gotcha. And when you said the most important thing was scheduling trends and alarms?
It's the core functionality, right? Just every system does that, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So at its heart, sort of the HVAC aspects, and then it can flower out into be more.
Yeah, absolutely. You could take your traditional BMS, a building management system, name your vendor, right? And not to plug my company too much there, right? But you take a vendor of your choice, so to speak, and if you have the integration and the interoperability with other systems, you can schedule trend alarm any system, right? Through that, yeah.
That's right. Great. Super. And we want to circle back around and questions. And thank you for that. And before we get to the next introduction video, I just want to remind the audience that you can submit questions and we'll try to take them as fast as we can. And we answer all of them offline if we don't get to them. So, Kevin, thanks a bunch.
You bet.
Yeah. All right. So one more introduction video here.
Your company mitigates many types of risk, but there's one critical risk you can't avoid: the networks running your base building systems. Every day, vendors and engineers connect to your building system networks with little or no security, making them extremely vulnerable to cyber attacks. Hackers can shut down these systems and force ransom payments, or jump over to your corporate network and engage in password and identity theft. Each new solution you add only causes the security risk to grow exponentially. The Intelligent Riser eliminates risk by putting building systems on a secure network completely separate from the building's corporate network. Then, vendors, building engineering, and building management are given secure access to the systems they need, while keeping hackers out. And the network is monitored and maintained 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, to ensure all building systems are secure, up, and running. All future solutions can now be connected to the Intelligent Riser, saving cabling and implementation CapEx and OpEx. Intelligent Riser, the smart building platform.
All right. Next, we're going to bring in Joe with Montgomery Technologies, and he has managed the triple-digit growth of Intelligent Riser installations since 2016. And for over 30 years, he's been known in CRE as a five-tool player with real-world experience in CRE technology, finance, syndication, management, and ownership. And Joe's also been good enough to support the boot camp before, so we're grateful for that. And Joe, you're up.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. I think the way I'd like to go at this, one of the two common themes really from all the panelists up till now has revolved around prioritization and connectivity. You've heard those words all the way through as themes. And so what I'd like to do is take a slice at this in a little bit different way to help facilitate your ability to prioritize and connect systems, because that's really at the root level of how you get from where you are to a smart building. So we'll jump in here. Goals. The master goal here is to understand that a smart building at its root requires three fully functioning layers. That's how we like to look at this. Layer one, the root level or foundational layer is network infrastructure. Healthy infrastructure means healthy communication, means the systems that you layer on top are functioning properly. The second layer is data infrastructure. And you can think of that as a repository, a database, or multiple databases that are housing data that can be accessed by layer three, which is the application layer. The applications interacting with that data to perform, to provide actionable intelligence and allow various actions to occur. So I like to look at this with the human analogy because we do that a lot in commercial real estate. When you look at the anatomy of human intelligence, it's going to show you that you can directly parallel to a building. From the bottom up, we have nerve endings. Nerve endings being our sense of touch, sight, hearing, and we take that information, that data, if you will, and it travels where? On the nerves to our spine, and then up the spine to the brain where it's stored, where we perform actions based on those inputs. So there's a communication chain within our body, and we use that a lot in CRE in pieces to describe how different systems work. And so I'd like to show you on the other side of that, the anatomy of building intelligence and how directly parallel, we really don't realize it, but we've recreated the human anatomy within a building. The devices, the security cameras, the IoT sensors, the BAS controls, lighting controls, access controls, those are all devices that are really the nerve endings. And then that input, that data comes from those devices through what? The cabling, which is really a direct parallel to our nerves. And then it goes up the spine, which in this case is the network in the building. And then it ends where? At the brain. The databases and applications in commercial real estate in a building are really the brain. And that's where the storage and processing occurs, just like we have in a human brain. So you have that sort of direct parallel. And then I want to take that and layer the building diagram on top instead of the human one. And on the left, you can see that the same four components are there. But on the right, to tie back to our goal, you can see now where those layers reside in the building. The network infrastructure is really the cabling and the network, the building network, that facilitates the communication in the building. And then layer two and three, the data infrastructure and the applications, are really housed really in two locations. This is where the analogy is a little different. Instead of a single brain like in the cloud, very often the data will reside, some of it will reside on the server in the building, some of it will reside in the cloud, but the applications are interacting with that data to achieve various results. And so that brings us back to our definition, why we're here. What is a smart building? Well, I'm going to complete that human analogy because really when you define what is a smart human, what are we really saying? When we say somebody is smart, what are we saying? We're saying they're smart relative to other humans. So if you think of it that way, that definition can slide around a lot. If you go back thousands of years, the definition of a smart human might be somebody who's, you know, can build a sturdy spear with a sharp point. And if you look at today in our today's universe, really what defines a smart building is systems that can communicate with each other and allow people to communicate with those systems. That's today's definition. And we throw in the word securely because as you've heard from all the other panelists, security, if you don't have that root level of cybersecurity, then you're whiz bang solution will fail at some point, and it'll be a costly one. So that ability for these solutions or these systems to communicate, a couple of examples, destination dispatch, all that really is access control. When somebody waves their badge at the front door, the access control system talks to the elevator system, runs an algorithm and brings the elevator that's going to take that person to their space as efficiently and quickly as possible. So that's two systems talking to each other to perform a higher level of function. That's that smart building definition. And the other one here is the indoor air quality idea, where you've got indoor air sensors that when they sense, for example, that the air quality has dropped, will talk to the BAS system and increase the airflow to bring that air to a healthier level. Again, you've just got two systems communicating to perform a higher level function. So today's definition of a smart building, you could have one or two of these functioning and you will be smarter than the majority of buildings as they exist today. That I can tell you 100% with 100% accuracy. So the definition of intelligence today might be that, but fast forward 5 years, and I think we can all look ahead and say that the definition of a system or two talking to another couple of systems will not be the same definition of the smart building 5 years down the road. And then the last point I just point out is that idea of consistent, secure connectivity is one that's often missed and is actually, in terms of prioritization, kind of foundational. It's the root, the to-do number one, because if you don't solve that first, then what you layer on top, it would be like if a human had six spines, two of them didn't work that well, several of them didn't talk to each other, you would not function properly as a human. And it's exactly the same in a building. If you've got different communication channels siloed or partially connected but not done right, then all the layering you do above of data aggregation and new applications will not deliver on the promise because you haven't solved the foundational elements. And a good example of that is the secure remote access idea, where if you don't have that secure and reliable, then the people that need to interact and perform these higher level functions really can't accomplish that. So that's our definition for today. And 5 years from now, when we're doing this again, Tom will remind me and I'll have to redefine the definition. Back to you, Tom.
Oh, hey, thanks. And listen, I love the analogies and the metaphor. I never realized this pane here was really a cabling problem.
Yeah, it's just cabling.
Gosh, maybe I can get Tyler to help me with that later. But you said some really important things there. You said, you know, one of the basics is just systems that communicate with each other, right? I mean, there's some intuitive understanding of that, but just a little bit on that. That there's a couple of aspects that there's a physical connection. They've got to be electronic, you know, physically connected on that. Then there's some logical and maybe even some software connection that you were describing. So can you just describe, you know, systems that communicate with each other? The boot campers want to know, well, how do I do that? How do I make them
That's great. And there are a lot of people out there who are really good at making that happen. Sometimes they go under the banner of systems integrator, master systems integrator. A lot of times BAS companies will have integration capabilities. And then sometimes, you know, in our world, sometimes we get called in as what I call the master systems integrator light, because they can't afford it and somebody needs to help facilitate that. So there are a lot of resources out there to help systems talk to each other. But underneath that, the kind of critical element is if you have multiple networks and, you know, rinky-dink, brittle networks that were installed to solve for a purpose, what you really got is a tangle of spaghetti, and you have to unravel that first to enable these systems to talk together. But once you've got that piece done, getting these to function together, you really do have a lot of resources out there, usually under the MSI banner.
So a quick follow-up to that is that, you know, these systems have been, you alluded to this, they've been computer-based and network-based for decades. Yep. And they're not necessarily converged, they're all scattered over the place. Does that contribute to messes in the riser management issues and just? And then a follow-up to that is, if you answer that, then is it worth dealing with an existing building or not? How do you decide? I got this mess. Now, do I deal with it or not?
Really good point. So the first part of that, to show you how dysfunctional these buildings are, just not very long ago, 2018, LBNL, Lawrence Berkeley Laboratories, did a study where they were trying to analyze the effects, the real savings of a next generation analytics company, software company. And so they installed this on a variety of large high-rise buildings. And after several months of study, the final paper came out about a year later. They couldn't even get the software to function consistently because the networks underneath were so brittle. They were down, in one case, they were down for over a month, 7 days on another building. And then they described in painstaking detail how systems had to be rebooted, connections reestablished. So it's the brittleness there that's very real, but often glossed over when someone's selling that next generation solution. So we always like to point back to that that root level solution. You have to solve for that, or you really have a brittle foundation that doesn't serve the future. And then what was that second question again?
Tom, we lost your audio.
I think I lost him. Nancy, did you catch that?
Nope. Sorry. I got muted by accident. That's not funny. I was just saying that it was about existing. You know, when do you know if it's worth it to untangle an existing building? So, I think you were touching on risks and the performance issues.
Yeah, and the answer to that is we, you know, in commercial real estate, you have to recognize that all of this cannot be achieved in one fell swoop or in one budget cycle. So understanding the prioritization aspect that Mark hit is really important. You have to really define what it is you're going to tackle first. Often that's securing the BAS system or putting a firewall in and migrating what you can behind it. So there's a path that you create for yourself that's based on financial constraints, based on budget cycles, but you have to start with securing or converging part and then migrating the rest over time onto that new solution or that new network that you put on. Very rarely can somebody just pull the trigger and do it in one fell swoop. We all recognize that there's a path, a budget cycle path that has to be followed, but that's achievable. And you can do that over two or three budget cycles and then get to that next level of sort of foundation and solution where everything can be as possible.
I think that's right. And we heard even Damien and John talking at the beginning about the things you're talking about. And really, this whole boot camp conversation is really good for even people that aren't beginners. You still have to build those foundations. So thank you for that. And we're going to jump right into the final video and panelist. Okay, great. We've got next Tyler with POE Texas. And Tyler is a leader and influencer on intelligent buildings and power over Ethernet with his unique mix of technical expertise, construction experience, and project management knowledge. Tyler leads POE Texas by making technology accessible to facility owners. And I know as somebody that's been in this business a long time, this topic is under-discussed and underutilized. So, Tyler, tell us more about that.
Well, thank you very much for that introduction, Tom. And thank you, Joe, for that lead-in, that fantastic lead-in about talking about the foundation for an intelligent building. And I'm going to be discussing how to build that foundation in an intelligent building. And let me clear up this question right away, up front. I'm a big proponent for power over Ethernet or PoE. Shocking. I know it's in the right there in the company title. And if you're about to open Wikipedia to look up what I'm talking about, don't worry. I'm going to explain what power over Ethernet is. And first, let's get a little context. So I'm going to flip the slide here, make sure I have control of them. Here we go. I think I've got it now. Let's see if I can get that slide to go. The current reality of building intelligence is that existing technology has developed into siloed islands, keeping power and data separate. And this siloed design path has made the adoption of building intelligence too costly for most businesses and institutions. You, as the owner, have to pay a premium to have one technology silo communicate with another. Even if you invest in the proprietary intelligence systems available, you end up with scattered, unorganized analytics of the data you're paying to collect. And the only way to overcome these barriers is through another layer of costly, complicated integrations that are perpetually out of date as more new siloed technology comes out. However, even with this inefficient, costly approach to building intelligence, The integrated building market is one of the fastest growing market segments in building construction because of the demand. Buildings, tenants, employees, they need and want the features that we've all been talking about. All of this leaves the door open for a technology that can become a game changer in the market. That's where power over Ethernet comes in. Back in 2000, Cisco, who's a big player in the networking and building market, took a page out of the old analog phone technology and started powering phones using the same Ethernet cable that sent the new Internet Protocol, or IP, voice technology. They added inherently safe power onto the same Ethernet cable as the Internet. Now, fortunately, they made a great decision. They recognized that since it's based on the same standard as the Internet, they sent it over to a standards-based group, the Institute of Electronic and Electrical Engineers, aka IEEE, to govern it as a standard. And over time, those crazy engineers at IEEE created new, more powerful standards. So you could go read the standards themselves, and they make a compelling reading. However, spoiler alert, power and data get together in the end. But here's really what you need to know. PoE has become the de facto standard for VoIP, security, and wireless communications for almost 20 years. So it's a well-established, reliable, secure technology, and because it's based on the same platform as the World Wide Web, it's the only globally accepted standard for power and data transmission. Whether you're in Tokyo, whether you're in Tulsa, or whether in Tucson, PoE is the same standard that is accepted in each of those jurisdictions. Well, you could say, well, that's all very interesting. What does this have to do with me as a building owner? And it all boils down to money. Our research, and I'm sure if you ask any of the presenters today, has consistently shown an average 36-month ROI on projects done using PoE by bringing down the capital expenditure for an equivalent non-PoE system by 30% and still driving down the utility and labor costs by up to 40%. PoE has shifted who can access the benefits of building intelligence to smaller and more cost-conscious installations. Oop, it jumped a slide here on me there. So great, you can save me 30% on my phone system. That's not going to move the needle on my project budget, right? And I agree. Just phones and Wi-Fi access points aren't enough to really make a building intelligent. To really be intelligent, you need to at least cover lights and blinds, and then throw in access control for good measure. Then, of course, you have to have space utilization and signage. And we can't forget sensors and HVAC. I think you get the point. Power over Ethernet has expanded significantly in the past 20 years, and I'm showing the wide range of products that are PoE powered just today. Now, let's see how far it's gone. Joe, who you heard just a few minutes ago, shared a wonderful slide with me that he shows his customers with what you can now achieve with power over Ethernet. Now, I won't list every one of them out for you because I know you have these slides and you're going to refer to them later. Well, what I will suggest is that as you're considering what new technologies you need in your intelligent building, start by looking at power over Ethernet. And I do mean start with PoE very intentionally, because as an old seasoned project manager, I did project management with ExxonMobil, iFly, major developments, facilities all over the world. I can tell you that trying to introduce a different perceived new technology as a value engineering solution does not work. The best way to capture that 30% savings I mentioned earlier is to start with power over Ethernet as a design basis, then consider more traditional options for VE. And here's where I'll conclude today by giving you a clear, achievable next step you can take. If you're really serious about saving 30% and getting real building intelligence, reach out to your preferred PoE supplier and see what they can do for you. And if you'll take my advice as an old owner's representative, avoid walled garden technology that's only compatible with itself or can only support a part of your building intelligence. Look for the most broadly compatible full building automation system you can find. And with that, I'll conclude. Thank you very much for your time and watching these presentations today.
Tyler, that's great stuff. And like I said, I think it's just nuts that this is not more a standard part of, of design. And I got a couple questions. In the spirit of boot camp, did you say walled garden technology?
Walled gardens technology. Yeah. It's a technology where if you get into it, you find out that they tell you things like, well, you can only do this if you can only accomplish this other thing you want to do if you use our technology, or you can only do things within our box of technology. And that makes for a very restrictive design and system. And the only way to get out of it is you have to pay more and pay a lot of money to get out of those walled gardens. So ask what compatibility technology they're implementing to make sure that they're not locking you in, preventing you from being able to use the systems you want, or especially the systems you have.
Yeah, well, I don't want to be in a walled garden, that doesn't sound like, but if I can ask, though, what are some of the pitfalls or the problems that you would want to make sure people know to avoid before diving into the POE?
So some of the pitfalls and the things that are going to come up is you're going to want to find the right resources to help you with Power over Ethernet. One of the great benefits of Power over Ethernet is that you don't require a licensed electrician to install it. But what you want to avoid is you don't want somebody to just like run in and think to themselves, oh, I can install POE and not talk to code officials, not deal with local jurisdictions, not understand some of the intricacies. So I'm going to really recommend talk to somebody who's done some of these projects before, even on a consulting basis. It's something we offer our customers to help them facilitate the process. I even sit on a training organization. We train owners specifically how to go through the process of implementing a POE-based building system, so you can get the right code official approvals, you can make sure you have the right design resources, you get the right design packages so that you get the best pricing from your vendors, all really important ingredients to make a good POE-based automation system.
That's good. And I think we can let everybody bring on their video again just for the last few minutes. We'll ask some questions, but I'm going to start with you, Tyler, as they're coming on. And first of all, I just want to acknowledge to the audience that we've been weaving your questions in, and we have a little less time for the roundtable questions because the presentations and the questions were so spot on that, if you could probably tell, we took a lot more time after each presentation than usually the one transition. So we've gotten the same amount of questions in. It's been really, really helpful. But Tyler, do you think there's a in the traditional design development process, is it just that the architects and the MEPs, and that they're just not used to it? Is it just that simple? They're just not used to doing it that way, and you're really having to swim upstream to get to the beginning of that design development process?
Fantastic question. And the answer is yes. And there's actually a little bit of ownership on both sides of the coin. It is new technology for architects and building designers. They're not familiar with it. On the POE automation side, we're not doing, or haven't in the past, done a very good job preparing pre-designed packages for architects and designers. And what that looks like is architects and designers need to know how to incorporate it during the conceptual design. What standards or rules of thumb should they do for sizing spaces, sizing HVAC, figuring out the number of ports. So those are all important features you can and should be asking from your POE supplier. It's something we do. We have a designer package that we roll out to an architect. The architect can open it and see how to incorporate POE from the first conceptual design layout of the building, making good decisions rather than deciding later on they have to go back and revise the building design to incorporate it.
That's great. And what I think I'd like to do with this larger panel, since we've had a lot of good Q&A time, is I want to call you out. If you could just give some closing thoughts, just a 20 seconds or so, 30 seconds of, you know, from your experience, you know, what is just a couple of words of wisdom or ways that folks should get started kind of in the spirit of the boot camp? And let's maybe John, let's start with you if that's okay. And just you've done so much. Is there just an overriding thought you would have on how to get started? And by the way, thank you so much again for getting up on your time today.
You're welcome. It's got to start with the outcome. You've got to start with what is the thing that you are trying to achieve, and then start to look at how am I going to achieve it? What can I get there? So that's what I would say. And just really consider those principles I talked about about, and it was it's interesting that there's maybe stages to get to the end result. So it's about preparation in the process.
Great. And Damien, besides buy a Ford vehicle, what would you say? Which helps with smart building somehow, I know, but what else?
Yeah, well, there is that connection, right? Vehicle to infrastructure connectivity. So, you know, that's probably another reason why we want to renovate a lot of our facilities too, so we can speak to the vehicles. But no, I think what John said is probably the most important, right? Making sure that you're in agreement with your business customers, what the desired outcomes are, because if you get that wrong, it may take you down a completely wrong path, which obviously will cost time and money to try and kind of get back to where you belong.
Good. And Mark, what would a pioneer say is a parting word of wisdom?
The advantage of having a smart building has never been greater. The challenge is really not the technology. It's here, it's proven. But rather, it's the willingness and the preparation to take advantage of it.
Kevin, build off your building automation explanation. What would you say for folks?
Yeah, well, John and Damien kind of took mine. I was thinking, start with the outcome in mind. I guess the words of wisdom for me, from my perspective, is, you know, if you're starting from scratch or building upon what you've got, just think about the future, right? And make sure you've got the right infrastructure, the right technology that's going to take you into the future that it's going to enable you down the road.
Good. And Joe, you're kind of in the middle of the building, so to speak, with all these guys swirling around you. What do you think?
I would complete the go right back to the building analogy. Where do you start with a building? You start with the foundation every time. You don't build half a foundation and start building walls and going up. You've got to start with the foundation. Layer one, the foundation of technology, is the network infrastructure, getting the connectivity and getting the communication at the root level functional at a 99.99% uptime level. If you don't have that, you're building off a partial foundation. We all know what happens when that occurs.
Yeah, so the five nines is usually a sort of an IT or telecom thing. Are you saying that's now a standard for buildings?
It has to be. It should be. Like in our world, we back what we do with an SLA that guarantees that. And anybody who doesn't, you're setting up the building for some level of not ideal.
Yeah, and cortisone won't help the building. Is that right?
No, just you.
Okay, good. Thank you. And and Tyler, besides getting these MEPs and architects enlightened, what would you say is some hearty words of advice?
My best advice would be reach out to one of the panelists here and spend time doing something to concept what you want to achieve. I really think John talking about what they did in Australia was a fantastic example. You have to come up with in your mind what you want to achieve, and you have to reach out some of these resources here to help figure that out. And we call that defining the intelligent building. What you want your building to achieve for real business purposes. And then the technology can flow from that, and then they can also help you find the right design resources. They can help you find the right contractor resources and create a plan for it. It all really comes down to that, defining what you want to achieve for your business.
And I think that's fantastic. And I know Nancy's going to remind us, but this is part of a series for the boot camp. But I will say that it's going to be a tough act to follow because, again, we naturally, between the spot on presentations and the audience questions, we ended up having extended questions on each segment, and that's a tribute to you folks and really, really great start. And thanks so much, Nancy.
Thank you, Tom. And thanks to all our panelists for participating. That was a great session. It was a lot of practical suggestions and advice for starting a smart building strategy. So thank you very much. And yes, I did want to remind everyone that part two will be on May 13th. That will be focused on IT, cybersecurity, and risk management. So make sure you register for that. And then before we sign off, I'd just like to take a minute to mention a few other events we have coming up in the next week. First, tune in tomorrow for our weekly news show, RealCom Live. You'll meet Farouk Aslam, CEO of Sinclair Holdings and developer of the Sinclair Hotel in Fort Worth, Texas, the first truly low voltage connected hotel in North America. Farouk and his team have been exploring the capabilities of low voltage DC power, and we'll share the latest about this exciting technology. And then next Thursday, we'll begin another new webinar series, The New Hybrid Workplace. Part one will be Occupancy Analytics and Flexible Hybrid Workplaces. And you can register for that on our website or using the link I've just posted in the chat window. That's it for today. Thanks to everyone for joining us. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye.